Sean, what would you say? Quick question on the systems front. If there was one system, what do you say moves the needle the most?
I would say you can go out and sell for every dollar of work that you sell. If you don't stay on top of, it's going to create $1.50 of costs on the back end if it's not managed correctly.
What's that, some sort of tool or activity to improve their business or workflow? Is there something that you could say would be valuable?
When you get freedom. Now, it's going to be very expensive for money. You're going to pay more than you ever thought. You might even pay this person more than you're paying yourself now. But what you are buying back is your time.
Sean, if you could start with the principle behind Profit First.
Yeah, the principle, or a lot of the, what we say, the four core principles of Profit First are actually not based on anything financial. They're based on normal. It's more psychology than it is mathematics or financial.
What are the most important tech investments for construction companies? And what can we learn from writing a published book in just 90 days? You're listening to Bricks and Bytes. And on this episode, we welcome Sean Van Dyke, construction coach and author. In this episode, we discuss a key principle of profit-first accounting and how setting aside profit-first transforms the financial health of contractors. We discuss the single most important tech investment for construction businesses. Hint, it's not what you think. And Sean's unconventional method for writing a published book in just 90 days. If you're enjoying our podcast, you can support us by heading over to www.bricksbytes.show and signing up to our newsletter. This is an easy and free way which helps us keep the podcast going. In addition, you'll receive all of the key insights from each of the guests we have on, as well as some bonus content about what's going on in the wider world of construction tech. And now, an announcement from our sponsor, Shift. Worried you'll lag behind because construction's going digital and you struggle with all things tech? You need the right BIM partner to help. That's why this episode is brought to you by Shift, BIM specialist for contractors who want to thrive and stay competitive in construction's digital future. Visit www.maketheshft.digital for more information.
So, Sean, how did you go from we wanted to be an architect, to engineer, to real estate developer, now author, speaker, and construction coach. And specifically, you offered Profit First for contractors. And you founded, was this a recent thing? I didn't quite catch this on the research, but founder of the Built to Build Academy. So tell us more.
Yeah, the way that you described it there makes it sound very purposeful, like I had a plan.
But oh, yeah.
The real story is that it was just one stumbling into the next thing, into the next thing. So I really fell in love with real estate and development, and started my first company in 2005 and was on the road quite a bit, traveling to different job sites, wherever the real estate was being developed. I was newly married, had a couple of kids, and my wife was like, you can't be on the road 3 or 4 days a week. So I started my first company where I could do real estate development where I live locally. And that was around 2006, 2007. And then 2008 hit. And for anybody that remembers that, everybody thinks about the residential crisis, but it really started in the commercial real estate side as the commercial banks stopped lending money to real estate developers. That's where it really started. So that was, and those were my clients. And so I already had my contractor's license then. So I just kind of made a pivot. I didn't choose it, but I was like, I got to keep putting food on the table. So I started a residential remodeling company and was doing that for several years. And then from there, one of my subcontractors who did all my trim and mill work, small company, good friend of mine, his business was growing. And I brought that kind of real estate and engineering background to residential construction, a lot of systems, a lot of spreadsheets. I was much better at the system side than I would say, I didn't have the tools. I, I wore the tools and could do some stuff. And then when I got around professional carpenters, I realized what a horrible carpenter I actually was. So my residential construction company was all about, if I'm doing the work, I'm losing money. If I'm selling jobs and tracking things, that's how I make money for my company.
But I didn't have your skill set.
Yeah. And I didn't realize like most residential construction companies are more craftsman based than they are systems based. So my subcontractor, who a good friend of mine did a lot of work for me, he came to me one day and was like, I think I need to hire somebody to run my company. Do you think that's a good idea? And I was like, yeah, it's a great idea. Companies do it all the time. They're called COOs or CEOs. You can own the business, but you don't have to run it. And I think that that's actually a good path for you. And he was like, oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I want you to do it. And I was like, I don't want to do it. I've got my own thing. But he was a really good salesman and he had some huge projects coming up. And he just told me, he was like, these projects are going to put me out of business because I got to go out and hire a bunch of people. I've got to train these guys, work with them in the field, and I can't run the business side. I need to bring somebody in. So he, like I said, he was a good salesman. And so I decided to help him out a little bit. And then he just kind of sucked me in. I became the COO of that company. We did high end trim and millwork, residential trim and millwork. We went from 6 guys to 20 guys in about 18 months. So I was just constantly putting systems in place. And that's what kind of gave me the idea of like, oh, any construction business can be systematized. And I kind of did my tenure there. And even as that owner said, about a year or so after I left, he said that, one of the biggest compliments I think I've ever received when I left, it was pretty emotional. It was really hard, but I wanted to do something else because I just didn't feel like I was getting what I needed to out of that or going where I needed to go with that company. And a year later, when we talked again, he said, hey, you did the right thing. You outgrew us. We couldn't keep up with you, and you did the right thing. So me getting into the coaching was just a realization of, hey, I've done these systems for my previous company, for this company. And I'm kind of looking back saying, I think I could do this for more people, but I didn't know what that business was. So I hired a business coach. At the time I didn't even know what a business coach was. And he kind of showed me the path of like how you systematize or put together systems, how you can package them up and how you can deliver them. This is back in 2016. And so one of the first things that I did was, all right, I jumped on Instagram and found a bunch of these young contractors, and I could see by the quality of their work, they did awesome work. But knowing what I knew, I was like, if they're spending this much time on social media, putting this level of detail,
it's not a scalable system.
There's no way they're selling the value of what they're, what they're producing. So I just spent hours and hours DMing people and said, hey, I'm kind of a systems guy in construction. This is what I do,
What would you say? Quick question on the systems front. If there was one system, what do you say moves the needle the most? Or is it a combination of multiple things that work together?
I would say bookkeeping.
You can
go out and sell for every dollar of work that you sell. If you don't stay on top of the books, the finances, it's going to create $1.50 of costs on the back end if it's not managed correctly. Mm-hmm. And because of the cycle times in construction, you got to put a price out there today, and that money's not going to come in until probably months from now. Mm-hmm. And if that money is the price that goes out is wrong because you're not familiar with the numbers and how the work, how all that works, then when that money comes back in, you've already lost. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of contractors struggle with is just getting started. The books and the admin side, the financial side of it is always kind of the thing they do at the nights or weekends to try to stay caught up. So
yeah, it makes sense. And so that led to the inspiration for Profit First for Contractors, I'm guessing.
Well, again, I wouldn't say that there was an inspiration there. It was more of a stumbling. So I had been coaching for a couple of years, And I was a pretty voracious, I wouldn't even say reader. I like to listen to a lot of books. And I stumbled upon Mike Michalowicz's Profit First. And I was a fan of his from some of his other books that he wrote. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually, and I tell the story in the book, I was on vacation. I was listening to Profit First. And I was like, oh, the way that this guy approaches looking at the financial side and the cash flow is very similar to how I teach contractors to look at their cash flow. But it was, his system was much more developed and it was packaged a lot better. So I started becoming a super fan of Mike's, went down the, you know, the Profit First rabbit hole and found out that he had a certification program. And being a coach myself, I'm just a sucker for other programs. So I said, hey, I want to go get certified in this because I want to teach it. And so I was working with my Profit First coach, and we were a few months into the certification process. And I just happened to mention to my coach, I said, hey, Mike should write a book for contractors. They look at the numbers a little bit differently. I would change a few things, but I think this would apply really well to contractors if it were written in this way. And my coach said, well, why don't you write the book for contractors?
Yeah.
And I said, What do you mean? Can I do that? And he was like, yeah, Mike, well, you know, we made a deal for what's called a derivative copy. And then before I knew it, a couple of weeks later, I was meeting with Mike and he was like, here's the book deal. Here's how it goes. Let's write the book. You know, and I thought, oh, you're going to help me write the book. And he was like, no, not really. You go write your book and do it, you know, in this time frame and let's get it published or whatever. So again, I didn't plan on writing a book. I just kind of stumbled into it.
Yeah.
Sean, questions. I just want to allude a little bit to your background and the very smart way. I noticed the pattern when you explain things and you explain your background. So the pattern is that you managed to reject things that didn't work out with you fairly quickly in your life, like then being an architect or engineer and then swapping into other things and very quickly realizing that this is not for you and you want to move forward into something different. Why do you think some people are not able to spot it in their lives and they decide to be, I don't want to say architects, and they're going to be architects for their whole life. Maybe they're not super happy with it. Like, you managed to switch from these careers very, very easy. Like, what's the secret sauce to this?
Well, part of that, I think, is just my personality and also being a middle child. Like, you know, there's typical things about middle child. The older always gets everything, you know, the first to get stuff. And then, but you learn from their mistakes. So it's a lot easier to say like, oh, as long as I don't do that, that, and that, here's the pattern that I can navigate and, you know, get through life without getting in too much trouble. And then my younger brother, well, he got everything, right? Because he's the baby of the family. And so there was always that sort of, I had to work so much harder. So I think I just carried that on my shoulders a lot, you know, chip on my shoulder. And I was attracted to hard things. So when things became easy, I got bored pretty quickly with them. And so maybe I mastered a skill or something like that. And then I would look around and other people, and nothing wrong with this, but other people get really comfortable there. I get really uncomfortable if I'm not challenged with something. And again, that's not always a positive thing. You can waste a lot of time doing things that's like just beating your head against the wall. But I think it's probably my ability to not be afraid of failure. And I mean, you hear that a lot, but I just like doing, hard things and figuring stuff out.
Sean, what would you say? You mentioned about bookkeeping and finances. So that obviously deals with what is happening at the moment, but how about like where companies want to grow? So growth, like what kind of systems can people put in place for growing?
Yeah, a lot of, especially a lot of contractors, the simple thing, or I should say the easy thing, is to focus on the top line stuff. And you'll see a lot of coaches and mentors and other things that focus on marketing and sales, and nothing wrong with that. You certainly need that. I just don't care about that as much because the only thing that matters in business is the bottom line. So the only way to get, as I say, the only way to get from top line revenue to a good number in the bottom line is through that profit and loss statement, through systems. And the companies that I've worked with, one of the things we try to help them with their business is say, where's the growth most important? And usually it's always at the, it's at the bottom line. And once we realize that, you say, oh, we could do less in revenue if we're making more on the bottom line. And I see that a lot is, and I can't remember where I heard this, but growth for growth's sake is the definition of cancer. Mm. Right? We just grow to grow and it consumes everything. But the only way to grow
sounds like startups. Sounds like a startup's business model.
Yeah. And but again, there's certainly that, especially nowadays with technology. Yeah. I think a lot of people, we get a little bit blinded by that startup culture, and especially in tech or whatever. It's like some of these, I just recently watched like the Jeff Bezos story, and he was like, yeah, we're not going to be profitable for decades. And you're like, well, how does that even make sense? But people use, you know, they use the Jeff Bezos or they use the Steve Jobs. It's like, oh, well, I'm losing money. They lost money too. I'm like, no. Let's not compare yourself to Apple or Amazon or whatever. Yeah, those are the unicorns or whatever. But
Martin, I think our audience are going to hate us right now. We have a lot of startup folks.
I love the reality. Okay, and this is reality.
If you realize what that is. But for construction companies, a lot of them don't have the advantage of being able to leverage your scale code, for example. Once you write code, it's very scalable, right? Once you make some media, it's very scalable. For construction companies, the main purpose is to get people and materials to a specific place at a specific time and do a lot of manual sort of things. Very hard to scale that. Unlike a startup company is like, man, if we can just get the right code to do the right thing, then we can disperse it throughout the world. Well, construction companies don't have the advantage of that level of scalability.
Yeah. They're very tangible businesses, and they take a lot of tangible activities, which generates lots of costs, which you kind of said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to go to technology, but I think there is one prerequisite to that question, and that would be to discuss the principle of profit first, and then maybe how that can be applied to innovation, because... innovation often comes out of the money within the project, right? So people have to account for it somehow, or they don't account for it at all. And we're a tech podcast, hence the emphasis on that. So, Sean, if you could start with the principle behind profit first, and then we'll go to tech.
Yeah, the principle, or a lot of the what we say the four core principles of profit first, are actually not based on anything financial. They're based on normal human behavior. It's more psychology than it is mathematics or financial. And what I mean by that is, mathematically, here's how pretty much every financial statement in your business works. We have sales, money comes in, then we go spend some money on running the business and producing the service. And then whatever's left over, we call profit. And mathematically, that works. Well, the profit first mentality or method or psychology behind it is, profit is not something that should be viewed as a leftover. We'll get to profit after we do all this other stuff. Let's define our business so that when money comes in, some portion of that has to be for our profit. If we're not making a profit, we're not running a business, we're running a charity. So we got to figure out, when that dollar comes in, what percentage of that do we need to protect and make sure we don't spend it? Because your business wants to spend every dollar that you have. So we set it aside first. And then, so we have sales comes in, we set aside our profit, so minus profit. And then whatever's left over is what we use to run the business. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have money left over to run the business after you've protected the most important thing in business, your profit, then that's your business telling you, you need to operate differently. Now, that gets into the details of like, well, how do we operate to charge more? Don't work for certain type of clients, do certain services or whatever. But that's your, in the way that it works, and tell your audience this, if they're kind of like skeptical about it, the profit first method works because it's how we just behave as normal human beings, and I can prove it. So I always ask people, like, what did you do in the bathroom this morning? And that always gets some people that are like, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Oh, shower. Or hopefully you brushed your teeth.
Exactly.
Right? So here's the profit first method in the bathroom this morning. So I'll ask you guys, you go into the bathroom to brush your teeth in the morning and you run out of toothpaste. What do you do when you run out of toothpaste?
Well, my partner makes sure there's always toothpaste.
Yeah. A lot of people, they just didn't say, well, I ran out of toothpaste. I go get another tube of toothpaste. But mm-hmm. None of us do that as normal human beings. We go into the bathroom. Oh, we grab the tube of toothpaste. We're out of toothpaste. We don't get a new one. We roll it up. We squeeze it out. We flatten it on the countertop or whatever. And we get a little bit more. Yeah. And if you think about the amount of toothpaste that you use, it's so much less than what we normally do when we have a full tube of toothpaste. Yeah. And it's enough to get by. And so we got to think, if that's enough, if that's all the toothpaste that I need to get by today, that's how much I should use all the time.
Brilliant.
And some people are like, well, no, I always go get it. And I'm like, okay, if the toothpaste doesn't work for you, then shampoo bottle or the roll of toilet paper, right? We get by on that.
Yeah.
So now let's apply that to the business to say, when you have all of your money for your business in one bank account, it's like a full tube of toothpaste. So we look at the bank account and we say, oh, I've got some money. I can go spend it, which is fine. We got payroll. We've got things to buy or whatever. But we go and we continue this behavior until the bank account is almost drained. And then we start rolling. We start getting by on less. We have spending cuts. Whatever we do. And we somehow get by on less for a period of time. And it's like, hey, if we can get by on less money, that's the amount of money we should be using every day. So the profit first method is, let's create smaller tubes of toothpaste, or we call them smaller plates, so that when we look at the money in our business, I'm looking specifically at the amount of profit that I have, because I have a bank account for it. And I have a bank account for my expenses. I have a bank account for my owner's compensation, or especially I have a bank account for my taxes. And when I look at that money in the tax account, even though there may be a small amount in there, I know I can't touch that to go buy some new equipment, because taxes are coming in a couple of months or at the end of the year. Yeah, and it's a psychological thing, and it's called the Parkinson's Law, or the law of induced demand, that demand grows to meet the available supply.
Yeah.
Full tube of toothpaste or full bank account. We just squeeze the toothpaste and we go. Yeah. We don't even pay attention to it. But when the bank account is smaller, that toothpaste is small, back to your original question, then we innovate and we get frugal. How can we get by on less, and how can we get a little bit more coming in? And that innovation and that frugality, if we can tap into that every once in a while, let's make that the new habit. We'll never do that if we have one bank account that has all the money.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
By the way, this is exactly how I run the accounting for my own business. So shout out to, maybe we can get some sponsorship revenue from this, but Starling Bank, they allow you to create spaces in your bank account. So like, you have your main bank, which say, I don't know, it's like 10,000 in there. Then you have spaces. So one of them will be like operational costs. Another will be VAT, value added tax, that we pay over here in the UK. Another will be profit. And then every transaction that lands, you can click on the transaction and split it by percentage. Yeah. So it would come in like £1,000, and then you could put like 20% profit, whatever it is, 40% operational costs, 20% taxes, 15% corporation, whatever it is. And then it splits it out for you. So, and it's a great system.
On the toothpaste and rolling of the toothpaste, I will just add that if rolling doesn't work anymore, I cut it in two and put the brush inside.
Yeah. So that when I present this, it's funny that you say that, because I say that there are three types of people. There are rollers, there are ironers who smash down, and then there are MacGyvers. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the old TV show back in the 80s. MacGyver, right? He always had some trick or whatever. And that's exactly what I say, is like, I always have a pocket knife with me. And that's the third type of person. You can cut it open and get that last little bit out. Yeah.
Squeezing the juice to the maximum.
That's right.
This is a trait of truly successful people. I can see where I'm going wrong now. Okay. So with that, Sean, so how could we, okay, as I, back to my earlier point about the fact that we are a tech podcast. So is there a way that people can account for implementing technology in their construction businesses? Because we don't need it, but it's a growing field. And quite often, if technology comes at a cost, and that usually goes onto the project, and then it ends up with a contractor, whoever's doing the project is too expensive because they use the fancy innovation tool. So is there a way that people can account for technology within projects more better, for my crap English?
Yeah, I always tell people, especially when it comes to technology, the easy thing to do is to go look for the fancy technology that's going to solve all of your problems. But the problem with that is there's very few all-in-one solutions where you can just hit the easy button. It's going to take care of everything. Every piece of technology, I think it's got to, you have to understand at the base level, what's the database that runs that technology, and what's the workflow? And without understanding how does this piece of technology process or hold information, and then what's the operating system within it, a lot of times contractors come to technology because their workflow that they're doing now is horrible to begin with, and they aren't manipulating or analyzing their own database of information. So they go out and get a piece of technology and they try to plug it in, but what they're really getting is a database and a workflow that they're not really familiar with. And so they say, oh, this thing was supposed to solve all my problems. I use it for the scheduling feature, but not anything else. I use it for invoicing, but not anything else. It's because their own workflow is all screwed up. And so I would say for the cost of technology for a construction company usually comes because they don't have some basic systems in place in the first place. So they gravitate towards one feature and maybe use that really well, but then one feature is going to wear out pretty quickly because it comes back to they don't have systems in place. Yeah. And a lot of contractors used to really struggle with this. This was one good thing I think that came out of the pandemic was I was telling contractors for years before 2020, you don't have to go out and meet with your clients. You can meet with them virtually. You can cover a lot of ground. You don't have to run around town. You can use Zoom or any of these virtual meetings. And they were like, no,
you said this before 2020?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was meeting with contractors virtually on Zoom in 2016, 2017.
Wow.
You know, and I'm like, this same thing that we're doing here, how I'm providing hopefully value to you. It's just business. You can provide that value to your customers. But they were like, but that's one of the things is construction companies, I think it is changing. They're very slow to adopt new things. Especially technology. And I get it. The reason why is back to what we were saying before about putting materials in place in a certain location in a certain time. New building materials come out that haven't necessarily been tested in the industry. That contractor is responsible for.
Hey guys, just a quick announcement. Throughout April, we're giving away a free sponsorship. This is a way for you to get in front of a highly niche and targeted audience. It will include podcast ads, social media ads, and newsletter ads. Visit our website, www.bricksbytes.show. That's www.bricksbytes.show, and hit the red button in the header to enter. Good luck.
The performance of that. So that's why we're, in general, the construction industry is very slow to adopt new things because that contractor has to be responsible for that over the life of the house or the performance of it. And so it has to be proven over time. But the pandemic forced everybody to jump into this new way of communicating. And now it's standard. Like it's, you know, contractors are using more and more technology because they were forced to. But that's in general why they're pretty slow to adopt new technology. Mm-hmm.
So you said earlier that if someone is trying to use a technology and it doesn't solve all their problems, it's usually because the workflow is screwed up, which means that they're not doing something like correctly or maybe is an industry standards, right?
That wasn't verbatim, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, there is like a concept, I think we invented it even a few months ago, business model as a service, right? So it seems like if someone is doing something and they are not entirely doing it correctly, how can someone find out better what's how to like move the needle in the direction of doing and having processes in there properly aligned so they can either tap into technology or start having better profits within their business?
Well, the way that I talk to contractors about it, and I think this applies to other businesses, because I use this as I say that there's a few what I call universal truths in business. And when it comes to any business, you have to you're selling a thing for money. And when you sell a thing for money, it creates a transaction. The only reason that anybody buys anything from you is because they're going to get value from that. And when you sell a thing for money and people buy it to get that value, you got to make a profit. That's the definition of the business. So I try to boil it down to those four things: the thing you're selling, the money that exchanges hands, the value that your customer gets, and the profit that you make. All right. Now, if that's the business, your customers are always asking themselves three questions, even though they'll never verbalize it. And if you can develop all of the systems in your business, whether it's with technology or other means, you need to answer these three questions, because this is what your customers are always asking. It is, where am I at? Meaning in the process, where am I at? Mm-hmm. How does this work? And what's next? And that's really can become a really powerful framework for any business, but especially for construction businesses, to say, okay, we want to use this piece of technology. How can we use it? Or how many of those questions can we use to answer this? So we have an accounting, you know, a accounting software. How does it answer where are we at? Oh, hey, you need to pay this bill. So here's your invoice, and it's going to come out, you know, weekly, every couple of weeks, once a month or whatever. Here's how you pay this invoice. So this how it works, right? And then once you pay this, we'll move on to the next thing. That's going to be what's next. So if we can implement, I always just say every system needs to answer those questions. Sometimes it's through a human being doing it. Sometimes it's through a technology, or sometimes it's the combination of a human being and technology. So for example, and you guys will get this when someone comes into your funnel or they're interested in buying your product or service. Sure, there's a lot of value with Martin or Owen jumping on the phone or jumping on the Zoom call and answering those questions about that person that's interested. But my guess is once you do that enough, you're like, hey, we're attracting the right customers that we like to serve. Those customers all have the same questions. Mm-hmm. If the right customer comes to us at midnight, can we answer that question? No, because you guys have families and you probably like to sleep, I'm imagining. But we could take a video of Martin answering the 10 questions that people always ask, put it on video. And so when people that are interested contact us, the first thing they get is Martin's sweet face answering the questions they were about to ask anyway. And then it leads them into the next part where eventually they do end up interacting with a human being. So it's like, where's the value in this step in the process? Is value added because Martin or Owen is personally there? Sure, there's some things that you guys need to do as real human beings that add a lot of value. But if we can combine that with the use of technology to say the value here is consistency. If I call Martin up at midnight and have a question for him and he's not available, the value goes down a little bit. But if you can create a way that I can get that answer from Martin at any 24/7, because it's consistent, that's where technology increases the value. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
And say, where do human beings provide the most value? Where does technology provide the most value? And where can we combine most of these things to provide consistency? Because that's what our customers really want.
Mm-hmm. I will just add to that, because I found during the sales process that The only thing that one should do to sell successfully is not to confuse someone and just be genuine about like the product or service, like what's going to happen. So like answering these questions and not to confuse someone with the way one presents themselves, really. That's, yeah.
Sure. Now, of the people that you onboard and are part of your program, how many of them, before they start working with you, don't have like a basic bookkeeping software or even just like a basic piece of technology? I'm just trying to compare to like what the perception is versus what the reality is.
Well, I think a lot of the clients that I end up working with are probably a microcosm. So I've got a very different view of my clients because of the type of information that we put out there. I design it so that it automatically weeds certain people out. So the way that we deliver our content a lot through, you know, email campaigns and landing pages and video and content and all that kind of stuff. If someone's not familiar with that or they don't like that, then they're certainly not going to come into one of our coaching programs because that's the way we deliver it, right? So the people that I end up working with, they have some level of technology or they're scratching the surface of that going, I need something more. I'm ready. I'm willing. I just don't know, you know, what it is, or they've got something in place. And like I said, they've got it and they're tinkering around with one or two features. And I try to come in and say, all right, that's great that you've got that. Let's break this down to its basic level. Let's define some systems. And then once we have the systems defined, then we can leverage that technology or that innovation to grow, you know, to grow your business. So a lot of people that reach out to me, they're already saying, I want this. I need this. I just don't know what the next step should be.
Mm. Sure. And what is this technology usually solving? Is it like specifically, is it like project management, like program scheduling? Or is it like, I don't know if you guys use RFIs, like requests for information, like basic, but very effective if you can digitize? Like, what is it?
Yeah, most of the contractors that I work with, the technology that they're trying to implement in their business is what I would say is more on the project management side, which is great. It solves a lot of problems for them. But what they eventually realize is a lot of construction management platforms are exactly that. We have a project. We're ready to start working on it in some capacity. Let's track everything and communicate with the client. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's beautiful. That's great. The problem with some of them is they sell themselves, I think, a little bit too heavy as a CRM. And a lot of contractors aren't really familiar with the power of a true CRM, saying like, yeah, once we get a project, we can do scheduling and selections and communication and financials and all that's great. Well, how did they get there? Right. Where did that project start from when they were an eyeball or a lead, or how many times did they hit your website? And so I deal with a lot of contractors who were trying to make their project management platform more efficient and using more of the features. But I'm always going back to like, you need to get at the top of the funnel. We need to get some systems in place over there. And your project management platform, yeah, it can send out some emails and some communication, but it's not truly made to be that customer relationship management from the very beginning.
Mm, so you would say CRM is like one of the core tools people should
use. I would say that the first person that you need to hire is a bookkeeper. The first piece of software you need to get is a CRM. And they will say,
you
need timesheets. We need that. And I'm like, yeah, that those are simpler, you know, project management. Sure. You need that too. But if I'm going to invest heavily, it's going to be in a bookkeeper first and a CRM second, a true CRM.
All right. I'm glad you said that. James, my business partner, if you're listening to this, then Sean's just giving us some peace of mind that we're doing the right thing. So. We just bought a CRM and paid.
Oh, great.
Yeah, Martin, what are you going to say?
Yeah, what is the, so bookkeeper, CRM, and if someone has a lot of cash that they would like to invest more within the some sort of tool or activity to improve their business or workflow, is there something that you could say would be valuable?
As far as a specific technology or just a general, you know, where are we going to spend this money?
Yes, exactly. It can be technology. It can be also general.
Yeah. So this is where I find a lot of contractors and probably a lot of business owners will reach this point too. And the way that I describe it is that there is a line in your business. So if anybody's listening to this, whether you're a contractor or business owner, draw a line on a piece of paper. And then right on that line, I want you to write my abilities. That exists for every owner of every company saying there is, let's call it a ceiling in your business. And it's that line is your abilities, whether that's in sales, in tech, whatever the aspects of your business, you're limited by your abilities. Now, below that line, draw an arrow going down. And right next to that, write the word help. And then above the line, draw an arrow going up and write the word freedom. And then stare at that and say, okay, my business is always going to be capped at my abilities. And as we grow, especially if you're starting out, you're probably going to have to hire or invest in help. And when you invest in help, you're hiring below your line, which means it's going to cost you less money, but it's going to be very expensive for your time. You got to train the person. You've got to onboard. You got to do all of it because you hired help. But as soon as you can, and this is where whether this is in technology, whether this is in a person, especially in construction companies, it's usually a person, is to hire above your line. Hire somebody that's smarter than you, more capable than you. It may not be across the board, but in the finances, in the sales, in the CRM, in project management, or maybe it's something very specific to your construction company. When you hire above the line, you get freedom. Now, it's going to be very expensive for money. You're going to pay more than you ever thought. You might even pay this person more than you're paying yourself now. But what you are buying back is your time. And ultimately, that's the thing that the business owner needs to grow in a profitable way is as soon as you can, hire for freedom and use that extra time to repeat the process so that 3 years, 5 years, 7 years from now, when you're sitting around looking at the technology or the people, you can say, I'm the dumbest person in this room. Everybody here is more skilled than me because I've hired for freedom. And then you should have a business that you can grow it, or you can say, cool, I can go do this again, maybe somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Brilliant. Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like so out of time. I don't think we covered the main juice, which was the technology. We didn't get through half the questions we planned, but that's usually a good sign. So I want to throw a difficult question at you, Sean.
Okay.
What's the hardest thing about writing a book?
The hardest thing about writing the book is, I think, committing to the process. And when I say the process, it's very frustrating. And again, I hired a coach and went through a program to kind of nail this process. But the hardest thing is when you're writing a book is just writing first. A lot of times when we all sit down and we write, what we actually do is we write, we revise, and we edit all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You need to
sleep on it. Forcing yourself, and this is the way when I wrote my book, I wrote it in 90 days, so less than just under 3 months.
Here's the idea for another course.
I said, I'm committing to writing. Yeah. Well, no, there's already another, courses out there that do this. So this is what I was like, I've never written a book before. I need to get some information. They said, commit to writing 1,000 words a day. And I said, okay, I'm going to give myself. So I wrote the book in 30 days. I revised the book for another 30 days, and then we edited the book for 30 days. So 1,000 words a day should give me 30,000 words that then can be edited down. It's much easier to produce a book if you're cutting stuff out than if you're trying to create filler. So the hardest part of writing was saying, did I get my 1,000 words in today? And some days I would spend 3 hours and I'd do a word count every 10 seconds. It was like 600 words. I'm like, another hour, 650. I'm like, it's very frustrating. And then, but other days it was like 2,000 words, 4,000 words. So at the end of that 30 days, I had close to 60,000 words. And I was like, all right, and it was garbage, by the way, but it was all out and it was down there and the book was there somewhere. And that was the biggest lesson. The hardest thing was committing to 1,000 words a day and just write. Don't edit, don't revise, just get it out, get it down on paper. And then, like I said, hiring for freedom. All right, I could edit this thing, but that's going to take me a lot of time. Let me hire an editor so they can take this garbage, 60,000 words of garbage, get it down to 30 so that we eventually could revise it and edit it down to the, I don't know, the 25, 26,000 words that it is now.
Brilliant. Brian, anything more from you?
No, I actually loved all of this. And sounds like you are a system man, and I really need to re-listen it a few times.
I am a nerd for systems, that's for sure.
Oh, at least a success. Okay, Sean, can you tell our audience where they can find out more about you?
Yeah, you can check out my website at seanvandyke.com. That's S-H-A-W-N, vandyke.com. My coaching programs are at the builttobuildacademy.com. Or you can just hang out a lot on Instagram. So at Sean Van Dyke on Instagram, and I got a YouTube channel. Hopefully, if you just type in Sean Van Dyke, my SEO is working. I should own that whole page on Google.
If you're going to subscribe to Sean's channel, don't forget to subscribe to us because he has 4,000 followers and we only have 700 and something. So please, don't forget.